Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRT-LP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us online anytime at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan, I'm your host. Thank you for tuning in this week. Well, we have a huge topic today, but we also have a couple of guests who can help us make sense of it, or at least get a little closer to the sense. Our subject is artificial intelligence, or AI. And our guests are Andy Jones and Margaret Merrill, two people at the University of California, Davis, skilled in the use of instructional technology. They were last on Davisville in winter 2023 when we talked about ChatGPT, which at the time was making a splash as an app that can automatically write reports or articles or other text, or as some say, generate content. But ChatGPT is only one of many AI tools. And like a lot of tech innovations, maybe all tech innovations, AI offers benefits as well as problems. Benefits such as faster processing of information that allows useful discoveries in all sorts of fields, but it also offers new ways for people to deceive and insult each other. Andy is a longtime writing instructor. He is the Associate Director of Academic Technology Services and was named Educator of the Year by UC Davis students some years back. Margaret is a senior instructional design consultant. Each has PhDs, and each works in the campus Department of Information and Educational Technology, where I was glad to work with them when I was employed by UC Davis until a few years ago. Margaret and Andy, thank you for taking time to talk with us today on Davisville.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's great to be back.
You know, I hope to shed some light on AI in general today by focusing on what you're seeing in your work, because I think the same opportunities and problems that you're seeing with AI also apply away from higher ed, which is to say, namely, we have to figure out how to use this thing. So let's start. In your work on your own and in what you've observed, how has the use and reach of AI changed since we last talked a year ago?
I'll say one thing that I've noticed as a difference since last year is the panic has gone down quite a bit. That a year ago, it was such an unknown thing and we didn't know its boundaries, we didn't know its limitations, and we weren't comfortable with the tool. And so there was a lot of uncertainty and high blood pressure around what it could or should be used for in a teaching and learning context. And I think at this point, folks are more aware of the limitations of the tool. They're starting to ask questions about specific places and ways that it could and should be used instead of this sort of general fear of this new unknown disruptive tool.
I think that's right, that there's less panic, as Margaret says. I think that we can talk about generative AI and ChatGPT as topics in our classes because of the ways that the world has changed over the last year or more because of the frequent, kind of more automatic use of AI in a variety of fields, that this comes up as a topic that will naturally affect a conversation of, say, how elections work in a political science class, or for me, how we approach writing tasks on the job in the advanced and pre-professional writing classes that I teach. That AI is now here, right? The genie is out of the bottle. And so, to a certain extent, we're letting students know, this will be a part of your life moving forward. Let's take a moment to look at how and where that will be true, what the opportunities are, what the pitfalls are. And so that's true both as a subject matter, as well as the way that it affects the way that we teach and the ways that our students learn.
How do you define AI these days? How do you describe it to your students?
I'm lucky in that I teach writing and fine arts classes, journalism classes, and advanced essay writing classes that I don't have to pretend always to be the authority on AI. They say that a great number of people consider themselves AI experts from having watched maybe a couple dozen YouTube videos or written a few reports. So we're all scrambling to keep up. But basically, when I talk to my students about AI, it's in the context of the chatbots that have become so pervasively used over the last year, with ChatGPT in November of 2022, the release of that really opening the floodgates. And I think that that's the immediate way that we talk about AI and try to understand what it does. But also we know that AI comes into play with spell check or a tool like Grammarly, or the ways that we negotiate voicemail if we're calling Apple or AT&T. The AI comes into play in the ways that we interact with computers rather than people. And one of the great joys of teaching at UC Davis for me is being in a classroom with 25 or more hungry, eager students, and to improvisationally bring them to a closer understanding of what their best versions of themselves can be. For me, that's in the writing context. And so that's very much a human interaction rather than an AI interaction.
The students you're seeing in your classrooms, more so every year, are used to this, just like they're used to all the technology that has come along in their lives. Right. And so you're trying to keep the human element. I mean, when I think of artificial intelligence, likewise, I'm no expert in the technology of it. But basically, these are huge data sets, right? Where language, machine learning, all these things get pulled together with faster processing speeds. And the net effect is that you can now seem to ask the machine and it will give you an answer. How do you see it being used? I want to come back in a minute to the idea that there's less panic than a year ago, because I find that interesting when you think of all the changes that technology is bringing. But how do you find people using it in your experience, either instructors or students, or Margaret, maybe when you're talking about designing a course with instructors?
There is a wide spectrum. And there are some faculty who say, under no circumstances are you to consult with ChatGPT or another AI in producing anything for my class. And there are other faculty, and I'm thinking, for instance, of Martin Hilbert in communication, who requires that students use ChatGPT to complete certain assignments. And so with that wide spectrum, there are a great number of applications to AI, but also a great number of warnings or admonitions that come from faculty to students about inappropriate use of this tool.
The uses that I find heartening are when I hear from faculty, and I've heard examples of this from a couple of faculty in particular that I can think of, when they're inviting their students to be really reflective and really critical about the use of AI, of generative AI in their work. And so inviting students to do a task by themselves and then do it with the help of ChatGPT and then evaluate the difference between the outcomes, but also evaluate the difference between the learning process that they as the student went through. And I think that kind of thing is really, really important, because there are things that our minds have to do in order for us to learn. I am not a cognitive scientist, but I know enough to know that our minds have to engage in certain processes in order for us to have enduring learning. And if we are offloading any of those processes to generative AI, then our brains just won't do that. And there needs to be research around this, around what is the impact of the use of generative AI in the cognitive development process, in the learning process. And so I really appreciate hearing about faculty who are, even though they themselves are not experts in generative AI or in AI, who are saying, here is a tool. And before we just jump in and use any tool, let's collectively as a class look at what is it doing to our learning? What is it doing to our outcomes? And let's evaluate that in a meaningful way together so that we can make informed choices about how and when and if we're going to use this tool in particular contexts.
That sounds like a very thoughtful approach. The research that you talked about, is there much research like that yet?
I'm not aware of any that is looking at it. Part of the problem is that some of that research about cognitive development needs to be long-term research. It needs to be over a period of time with the tool used in a, you know, I mean, controlled experimental design, right? Like, you know, we've had how many months since ChatGPT came out and since we've known this was even a potential issue. And so I hope to see more of that, but I think acknowledging that that type of research needs to happen is really important so that we don't just blindly go in and say, we should use the tool for everything it possibly could do, right? It's the Jurassic Park question of just because it can be done doesn't mean it should be done. And so let's be really thoughtful. We're a research university. Let's be researchers about the way that we think about the use of this tool.
One thing that technology that we're doing to ourselves, humanity is, we're learning as we go. It's like we're conducting an experiment on ourselves. Before we have the results, we're introducing these changes. And yet I'm struck that you both said that there's less panic about this than there was a year ago. And I wonder, is this because, well, I mean, it could be because of ignorance, I have to say that, but it could also be because of confidence that after some years now of getting used to the internet age, social media, whatever, maybe we're developing, your faculty are developing sort of an intuitive confidence in how to approach new tech. What do you think of that? Do you think that's why there's less panic? Because in a minute too, Margaret, I'm going to want to ask about something you said recently, that these large generative models always hallucinate. And I want to come back to that in a minute as to why that's not a fatal flaw. But first, let's talk about confidence. Do you think we're getting a handle on these? Faculty are getting a handle on these tools?
I think that they're, because there's less of this panic, and it can be offered as a topic of discussion, I think that there's been a shift away from only looking at AI as like a plagiarism machine. That's true for a number of reasons. One of them is that there are plagiarism detection engines that have become better tuned at recognizing what is created by generative AI. And so this has led to an arms race where, of course, ChatGPT and other tools are improving every week, every month in what they do, right? That they have a faster responsive time and an expanded knowledge base and improved understanding of like conversational English, et cetera. But at the same time, there are companies such as Turnitin and others that have become stronger and stronger at recognizing what is written by a human and what has been created by ChatGPT or another such engine. So I think that that has led many students to realize it's not worth the risk for me to offload this writing opportunity, for example, to ChatGPT. But I think more holistically, at least this is the optimistic way that I've explained it to my students, UC Davis is really hard to get into. And students have had to work so hard as high school students. And really, a UC Davis degree can launch students into really financially remunerative careers, but also careers that are very meaningful, right? That this is like what life is all about, to find, to be of use and to contribute to the knowledge of topics that we care about. Not only do you not want to risk that by having ChatGPT write your paper, but people at other far less selective universities could just ask ChatGPT to do that work. And as UC Davis students, we want to be future leaders. We want to be the strongest in our fields. And as a result, many students recognize that all the time and money that they have invested in a UC Davis education would be a poor investment indeed if at the moment of authentic assessment, they just say, oh, I'll have ChatGPT do this work. It would be a profound loss of opportunity.
And so you're sort of saying, look, you might get caught. The tools are better. And also respect yourself, respect your work, respect the work you got here, and respect what you want to do. Does that work? Do students respond to that?
I feel that they do, in part because I've been teaching writing for 34 years now at UC Davis. I'm looking at their essays and I'm saying, this does not have like a perfect sheen of something that was written or augmented by ChatGPT or something else, right? This is like a smart essay that is interestingly flawed in ways that give me room to help students understand how they can communicate more clearly, more effectively. And so this has been less of a concern for me, but also I try to connect meaningfully with each of my students. I want them to know that they will not only have a lifetime of regret if they cheat the system, you know, one could think 10, 20, 50 years from now, but that they will be like cheating me, Dr. Andy, who has invested so much of his time and energy in making sure that they feel like they're more confident and more effective writers at the end of 10 weeks for me. And I think that that approach has worked pretty well.
Yeah. So this is the art of teaching, I think you're describing there, making a connection and conveying not only the subject, but the significance of the work itself.
I think that's right. I would also add the joy of a difficult process, right? That yeah. We're doing meaningful work, but that you can gain satisfaction from engaging in the process of writing well, even if the final product does not meet a student's standards or my standards, it's the learning that matters.
I'm pretty sure that in my younger years, I've written all sorts of things that I was glad to have learned from, but would never want to show anybody.
Right.
Do a quick station ID. We are talking with Andy Jones and Margaret Merrill of UC Davis, and our subject is artificial intelligence, specifically kind of what they're seeing this year. We're updating a conversation we had a year ago. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davisville on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. So, Margaret, you recently talked to part of a session on campus about language instruction in AI. And you had three caveats that you mentioned for instructors when using generative AI tools. And your first was that the large language models always hallucinate. In other words, they make stuff up. Isn't that a fatal flaw?
It's an interesting question. And I find it, I was really interested by this research study that I found that I mentioned in that panel about AI, which is that the nature of generative AI models is that they are always going to hallucinate. And this study was done by computing researchers who were looking at very technical things within the field of computing that is not my expertise. But because they are generative, they are always going to be hallucinating. And so whether this is a fatal flaw, I think depends on how we think about what we want to use the tools for. I think that because we know that they're going to hallucinate, we don't treat them as a trusted source of information, right? That we fact check what they tell us. We train, we teach our students, we teach those that we work with to also fact check what the tools are producing. But I think that when you're doing, there are certain tasks or certain types of work where trust is less of an issue. I saw a flowchart that was like, when is it appropriate to use generative AI? And one of the decision points was, do you need it to provide you accurate information? And if the answer was yes, then this is not an appropriate time to use generative AI. But if you're trying to brainstorm, if you're trying to generate ideas, if you're trying to come up with a good title for an esoteric presentation, then maybe generative AI is an okay tool to use at that point, because it can very quickly just generate a whole bunch of ideas, which you would then tweak and adapt for your specific context. And so I think there are many tools that have weak, I think there are many technology tools and other tools that have weaknesses, and we just don't use that tool in the area of its weakness. And yeah. So it doesn't have to be a fatal flaw.
Yeah. And I take your point about sources. I mean, we didn't need generative AI to have dubious or sketchy sources of information. They've always existed. That's part of the point of a good journalist or a good researcher. A good anybody who wants accurate is if they get a source of information, they put it through their paces and say, well, okay, you know, maybe this isn't all that it seems to be. Let's check this against other sources. And the idea that you can use that to bounce ideas off, much like you might anybody else. Maybe you've got a friend who's, you know, brilliant at coming up with ideas, but has an unreliable grasp on facts. Well, they might still have an insight you can use. You just don't use their facts.
We often do talk to people who aren't expert, you know, like we have conversations all the time about topics, and our interlocutor is not an expert in the topic, right? And so, yeah, many conversations that we have, we take with a grain of salt.
So the caution there is that if you're using AI, not to rely on it too much. You had a couple other caveats I want to mention. One was, your second point is that people have to learn how to handle the biases and cultural stereotypes that the AI models display. And again, these models suck in biases and stereotypes just like they do knowledge from all over the globe. I mean, this isn't about one culture. This is pulling in from all over. How do you handle that? Is that like checking the factuality of it as well? Or how do you do that?
I don't really know. I think that's trickier and that's much more nuanced because it's trickier and it's much more nuanced. I think being aware of it is really important. I think checking tone, if one of these LLMs or chatbots is producing text for us, I think having a very high bias or stereotype filter ourselves is going to be really important. What are potential pitfalls of this text? I think awareness, frankly, is one of the things that is just really important for us as users of these tools, is to just know that because these tools are drawing from data sets that encompass large portions of the internet, anybody who's followed a Twitter thread into dark waters knows that on the internet, there are biases and things. And because these tools are pulling from that, that is also going to be something that is always there. And so being aware of that and so ourselves learning, what does bias look like? How can I identify bias in my writing, in the writing that I'm relying on that's being produced by one of these tools, is something that we can, again, be aware of and train our students in particular in how we use these tools.
Sort of a work in progress in a lot of areas, really.
Yes.
Your third point had to do with, in this case, UC Davis vetting AI tools for security, privacy, compliance with disability law and other legal issues before they could be recommended at UC Davis. You know, I worked there and I'm glad the campus is putting these tools through their paces before approving them. But I wonder, and Andy, this also reminded me something that you had in one of your forums about this. At the pace AI is developing, I wonder if the campus has time to keep up. And Andy, the thought I'm thinking of here, one of the people at one of your forums talked about, when it comes to AI and assessing work, as soon as you become interested, you become the person who knows. Both those things are describing things that are very hard to keep up with, and yet here they come. You know, if we had this conversation a year from now, I'm sure there'll be even more changes. How do people keep up with this? And let's broaden it, not just instructors and students, but even maybe parents, if you have insights about that. How do people keep up with what's changing here so they know what to do for their students, maybe for themselves?
It really depends on the nature of those changes. I mean, for instance, what Margaret was just saying about inherent bias in the language created by ChatGPT or another AI engine being based on the language that's available on the internet. That is, I think, a really important concern, because we don't want students, to the extent that they're learning from these different tools, to replicate or amplify those biases. But there are a great number of changes in AI that I think that parents and professors and students should not spend all of their time trying to keep up with. I think that this is something that might be checked in on, you know, once a month, once every 6 months. But, you know, we should be thinking, as we were talking about earlier, how can we connect meaningfully with one another, rather than always trying to figure out what is in store for us from the next AI engine. We know that, as we'd expect, AIs are getting smarter, they're getting faster, their language is becoming more nuanced in ways that we were talking about before. And this goes with the sort of safeguards and safety features that all of these AI tools are trying to implement. But sometimes they'll do a ham-handed version of this. And people, Margaret mentioned Reddit before, people have complained on Reddit where ChatGPT was asked a question about a controversial topic. And ChatGPT would just say, you know, it's not appropriate for me to comment on this topic. And that kind of like shuts down the conversation, so that users have to figure out, what are the different sort of questions I can ask? to circumvent these automatic restrictions on sort of conversations that might take us into the dark waters that Margaret spoke of before.
Okay.
So it's certainly an evolving field, but I think that many users should simplify their expectations, not lower their expectations, but just decide, how might this serve me and how can I use these tools well, rather than always trying to keep up with the newfangled changes.
Okay. And we're just about out of time, but one thing I got out of that was several things, but to distill them, human connection, which in a way is reputation, right? Reputation and engagement. Skepticism, useful skepticism, probably not tilting into cynicism. Certainly you need to design these tools. We haven't talked about ethics or the morality of design or anything like that, but that seems inherent to me.
I'd say one other element that we haven't talked about in this segment is just rewarding conversational curiosity, right?
Okay.
Where you could ask ChatGPT, and I do this as a poet, what if, and then you come up with like an outrageous question or opportunity, and then ChatGPT will give you some answers. And if you were to say, well, give me 10 bulleted reasons why X would be true. And it might be that like 8 out of the 10 would be the sort of hallucinations that Margaret was speaking of before. But number 9 might be really insightful. And maybe you could do something with that. Maybe that would inspire a follow-up question. Okay. So with the hallucinations, I think we should all continue to monitor what we encounter for bogus information. But sometimes we just want to have a conversation with a mostly bright interlocutor about topics that we care about. And I think ChatGPT can often do a responsible job of that.
And Margaret, would you add anything to that?
I think exploration and thoughtfulness, and you said maybe not skepticism, but not to the point of cynicism, I think are good ways to approach it. There are hundreds of GPTs being created all the time. So I think keeping up is not realistic, but I think being thoughtful and creative and looking for ways that we can use these tools or any tool to push learning forward in meaningful human connected ways so that it really is for the betterment of ourselves, those we interact with, our communities.
Right. Well, we've come to the end. So we've been talking with Andy Jones and Margaret Merrill from UC Davis, instructional technologists, and talking about AI. And we got a hold of a little bit of the subject there, but Andy and Margaret, I really appreciate your engagement on this. And maybe in a way we're modeling the whole idea of AI. Talk with people about it rather than just talk to a machine. So Andy and Margaret, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks for having us.
This is Davisville, KDRT, 95.7 FM, Davis, California. I'm Bill Buchanan. Thank you for listening.